president, somebody, some soldier came and put a gun in your head and said, you're going to vote our way. That's what's wrong. And the American public has to understand that these workers, although farm workers, the basic thing that's wrong is that they're not getting the right to vote their conviction, number one. Number two, you know, the growers are fighting very hard for the Teamsters because there's something in it for the growers. They wouldn't fight for the Teamsters if they were going to get the same contract we get. They're fighting because they're going to get a sweetheart contract, and in the sweetheart contract, the workers are the losers.
I just noticed an item that came over the wire recently that indicated that border agents have taken into custody about 80 suspected illegal alien farm workers hours before many of them were to vote in a farm labor election.
Right.
Has that been a common occurrence?
Yes, it has been. Those border patrolmen, when those illegals are breaking our strikes, they turn their back on them, let them break our strike. But now when we're having elections, and the moment that we sign them up, they'll go in and it's a rotten, it's one of the most awful demonstrations of corrupt power from the government. The Border Patrol coming in and taking these workers who are about ready to vote because they found out that they had signed for us. This is an evil operation by the Immigration Service, an evil operation.
Well, the Immigration Service is in on this conspiracy too, then? I mean,
sure they're in. There's no question. It's big stakes. California agriculture is the biggest industry in California. It's what, something like an $8 billion industry. They haven't stopped fighting. And the state board is afraid to act against the growers. And I'm just wondering what Governor Brown's doing, because he should be acting. Governor Brown has a lot of this information. He should be acting. He's not acting. And something's got to happen.
There's a Catholic bishop on this agricultural board. Now, what is his stance on all this? Has he said anything about it in answer to your charges?
Well, they lied to us. Let me tell you. We got, Kintz made a deal with the growers behind our backs, which is against the law. When the growers went and got an injunction to prevent the state from counting the ballots, which were our elections, and we needed to have those ballots counted so we create a bandwagon effect in Salinas. When we got after Kintz and after the board to go to court, when they went to court and they were going to the state Supreme Court here in San Francisco, and an hour before they went to court, the growers called Kintz. Kintz made a deal. We found out because this evidence came out in a hearing we had. The growers called Kintz and told Kintz, we will withdraw our suit, our injunction, if you don't go to court and give us 10 days. And Kintz could have gotten to court that same morning. We're going to count the ballots that same day, 10 days ahead. Kintz went back and made a deal with the growers, gave him 10 extra days. When I attacked Kintz, I called the board right away. I called him and I called the bishop and I said, what is this business? You know, Kintz making deals behind our backs. This is an illegal procedure. He should be fired. And he didn't know anything. The board didn't know anything when I brought it to their attention. When I attacked Kintz publicly, the board came and said, oh, it wasn't Kintz who made the deal. We made the deal. So the board lied to me. Number one. Number two, in Sacramento at the hearing, we raised the issue. Leonard Woodcock from the Auto Workers Union and some of our people met with the governor, and we said, look, there are now rumors that the board is going to let the Teamsters use the dues authorization cards to qualify for elections. I said, that's illegal. They couldn't be used, and we want a commitment. The board, the bishop and the board and the governor gave us a commitment. They will not use the dues authorization cards to qualify. What happens? They turn around and the Teamsters have been qualifying illegally for elections using the dues authorization cards instead of using the regular card that has to be signed by a worker where he specifically authorizes the union to represent him. Two times the board has lied to us, so we have no faith in them either.
We're listening to In Depth. Our guest today is Cesar Chavez, president of the United Farm Workers Union. I'm Al Hart, and joining me in the questioning is Mike Beeson.
Mr. Chavez, what's preventing the union movement, the labor movement, from getting involved in this situation as far as cleaning house is concerned? Because when these kinds of charges are being made and this kind of a situation exists, it doesn't do the labor movement in total any good. You mentioned Mr. Woodcock's being involved. What is the union movement doing, if anything, about your problem?
Yes, I've asked George Sabini's office to provide us a fact-finding committee of the people and the members of the executive board of the National FL-CIO, and we're waiting for an answer. We want them to come and look at the situation. Now, we had today, last night and today, we have a committee of about 36 clergymen from throughout the United States and Canada who are now on their own field trip investigating these charges, and they're going to be having a press conference today or tomorrow. They're going to be talking to the governor. We have a group of top echelon church leaders coming in next week. We've got we're waiting for the FL-CIO, and we're trying to get other groups, because the charge is always made, well, they're losing the election sour grapes, and to get away from that, we're trying to get third-party groups to come and look for themselves and then tell the public what's happening. Maybe this is where we can break with that. We've got a... the press, really, in this one instance, have been shying away from these things that we're claiming are going on, from the corruption and all that stuff, because they say, well, you know, it's sour grapes, they're losing elections, so they're making these wild charges. And I'm telling you, they're not wild. We can, they're documented, we can prove them. And so we got to get out of that fix, you know, we're behind the eight ball on that score.
As far as this, the whole question of the farm labor situation is concerned, this conflict is a major one, but what about the farm worker himself? Is he really getting anywhere despite this hassle? I mean, even if you do manage to prevail in this particular situation, what kind of clout do you have and what kind of a shake is the farm worker getting?
The farm worker is a lot better off than he was, say, when we started 10 years ago. He was getting 85 cents an hour. Now the minimum wage is something around between 225 and 250. A good many of them have a few benefits. Some have protections from labor contracts. And we force the growers to admit and to accept, at least in to accept verbally or to accept when they're trapped, you know, that unionization is inevitable. Unionization is going to take place in the fields. But I think this is the very last fight we have, this all-out fight. We've been fighting for 10 years. We've got to get this conspiracy broken up so workers can have the right to a free election. And we're ready to accept the workers' choice. If a worker votes against us on a free election without being intimidated, without being fired or pressured or lied to or false promises made to him, if he doesn't want us, fine. But see, the big problem is that we gave up our weapons. Now we got nothing because we thought we were going to get a law. We don't have the law. We don't have the boycott. We don't have the strike. So what do we got, you know? And of course, we're very worried about that.
Well, the reason I asked that question is because I wondered about the motivation of the worker to really become involved, because if his lot has improved substantially from the very bad conditions that existed at one time, I wonder if he really feels he has as much of a stake in unionization as he once had.
The workers who have benefited directly from the union are very involved. People under union contracts now. We went to picket Kintz here last week, and we had about 1,000 workers came from as far away as 400 miles. They're involved. They're very upset at what's happening. A lot of them are very frightened. They're intimidated. And they're very frightened, and they say, well, I like the farm workers union, but I don't like it. I'd like my job a lot better. It means I'm going to get fired. I can't vote for you. One good thing is the workers are intimidated and frightened, but they will sign affidavits, and they will sign them, and they'll give them to us. And some of the things that they pull on, like, for instance, there's been cases where the ballots have been tampered with. A case at the Mapes Ranch, a week ago Friday, an election was held near Tracy, and at the Mapes Company, a company that the Teamsters have had for something like maybe 15 years, 14 years. When the election was terminated, we asked the board agent, count the ballots. He said, I'm not going to count them. I said, you got to count them. No. He took the ballots, put them in the back of his car, and went to Lake Tahoe. And the ballots were lost between Friday night and Monday morning. The ballots were counted Monday afternoon, and we lost the election. You imagine what the workers are saying? When we think that we had the majority of those workers voting for us. At the Gallo elections, they lost some ballots that had been misplaced at the Gallo election. What we expect, you know?
Let me ask you, you've made very serious charges here against a number of governmental agencies, charging collusion, etc. Now, what do the people in Sacramento, the legislators, say? You had plenty of those people who've been on your side before. Are they shouting from the rooftops that there should be an investigation here?
Not now, but we're getting after the Speaker of the House, and we wired him a couple of days ago and said, it's your responsibility to the citizens of California to investigate the charges. We can give you enough information to prove to you that at least initially we're just not talking on the top of our heads. We want an investigation, and we're waiting for an answer from him. We asked Brown to conduct an investigation, and we're now getting private parties from labor, from church, and other groups to come in and investigate themselves. It's a very serious situation. There's other things that I'm not making public now because I think that it would hurt an investigation. But there are things that are even more serious than what I'm saying that I'm not revealing at this time because I want the investigators to have a first shot at them. But it's a very serious situation. Very serious situation.
What about support from other unions? Now, I know the United Auto Workers have given you considerable support, monetarily
That's right.
and otherwise, but the rest of the union movement seems to have sort of hung back in this whole situation.
Well, we've had a share of support from other unions, from the Labor Federation, both the state and the national, of course, and much more in some areas than others. but that we've had from other international unions. But, you know, it's a big drive, and it's been going for a long, long time. Labor unions have their own problems. Sometimes they can help, sometimes they can't, but depending on what their position is at that time regarding strikes and so forth. But we have gotten, all in all, very good support from the labor movement. We can't complain.
Remember reading not too long ago in one of the national magazines was saying that the UFW and Cesar Chavez were the darlings of the liberal movement for many a long month, many a long year. And then suddenly everybody kind of lost interest in the whole thing, and nobody cares anymore, and that's hurt your boycott, for instance. By the way, is that still going on, the grape boycott?
We're boycotting grapes and lettuce and yellow wine still. Sure, nothing has happened. We've had some elections. Every single election is being challenged either by us, by the growers, or by the Teamsters. The election is going to wind up in court for another 3 years. So what do we got? The boycotts are going on. It's a frustrating experience, especially when we have a state agency and a law that's such a good law is not being lived up to. That's what's frustrating.
Mike?
Well, most of the time, we assume that these issues are primarily economic because of the money involved. How much of a part does racism play in the problems that you're facing right now?
A big part. Let me tell you, a very big part. One of the problems people have to understand is that the powers that be in those small rural communities are agriculture. Not only do they control the economic life of the workers, they also control the political life of the workers. And they know and we know what happens. When we get workers who join unions, the very next step, automatically they want to become the judge, they want to become the city councilman, they want to become they want to be a member of the water commission, they want to participate once they feel some security in economic life. And so what is happening is that for many, many years, there's been this tremendous paternalism on the part of the growers. And that paternalism is there, and the moment it's challenged, the moment the workers begins to tell the grower, I have my own association, that paternalism turns invariably into racism of the worst sort. The growers don't like our union because most of us happen to be minority group people. And they tell the workers, now you were dealing with if Cesar Chavez was a white man, we'd deal with him outright. It's there, you know, and it comes out at the worst moments.
Do you have any political aspirations, Mr. Chavez? Do you want to run for Senate, Congress, Governor, whatever?
I have enough problems with the farm workers. That's all I need. No, I don't have any aspirations.
You don't want to run for public office?
No, I want to run for getting a good life for the farm workers. That's my ambition in life.
I'm wondering, has anybody from the press, a reporter for a newspaper, a television reporter, or somebody, have they really gotten inside this whole matter of late that you're making these accusations about?
No. We had a big press conference the day of the Gallo election. A big press conference with about 30 people representing major newspapers, magazines, television stations. I laid out four problems we had. And every single reporter went back and among themselves or to our people said, well, we're not going to look into the charges because Chavez is losing some elections and it's just naturally would he be raising those charges. They haven't been able to understand that these things are real.
But isn't that strange? I mean, it would seem that a good reporter, from the charges you've made, you say the Immigration Service is in on it, the state is in on it, the Labor Relations Board is in on it, the growers, the Teamsters, everybody conspiring against you, seems like it's made to order for some investigative reporter, and you say nobody's interested.
It took us 16 months of 1970 to get the press interested, to get them to a point where they would conduct an investigation themselves and find out. So it'll happen, but it's going to take a little time. It'll happen.
Mike?
What's all this doing to your feeling about your fellow man? You spent a lot of years bashing heads with a lot of people trying to straighten out these situations, which would seem ordinarily, if people were treating each other the way they should, wouldn't be a problem in the first place.
Well, you see, we expect and understand, we don't accept the grower Teamster conspiracy and the deals that they make to try to defeat our union. We expect that it comes. Now, what's frustrating and for the first time what's discouraging is to see a state agency be involved in that kind of situation. And especially because in this country, you know, elections are pretty sacred, right? The right of a man to have a free vote is pretty well protected. And somehow you take for granted that it's going to happen automatically. And when you see that it's not happening and that the elections taking place in California agriculture are no different than elections held in some of those Latin American countries where there's a couple of soldiers there at the voting booth, you know, you tend to get discouraged because we'll accept everything except the state not acting, you know, and not enforcing its own laws. It's discouraging, but we just got to work hard.
Thank you, Mr. Chavez. Our guest today has been Cesar Chavez, president of the United Farm Workers Union.
This has been In Depth, a news program that goes behind the headlines for the reasons things happen. Join us again next week at this same time for In Depth. In Depth has been edited in order to conform to time requirements.
So you consider yourself a pretty good businessman,
And some group problem solving. It's important for me to ask open questions and to get out the children's ideas and to help them build on some solutions.
Good. You're getting into it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood, here you come.
Oh.
Can I be your agent?
Oh, God.
These sessions are not easy.
Girl from Lincoln, Nebraska, made it good.
For the Mickey Mouse Club.
They're playing again.
Yeah. Yeah.
My son knows every one of them. Little Annette, who I used to follow growing
Annette.
Up.
Annette. Oh, yeah. She was my favorite.
She was my favorite too. I was
a
teenager.
And didn't she go on to be?
Until she needed a training bra.
I even had lunch with her at Disneyland.
Did you really?
Disneyland Hotel.
Oh, Cheryl, you can take your blue pencil and turn the page. We're not going to do that. Go back to 7B. Do you need to take that stuff about the human being?
We're just looking for you. In a second, why don't you have a seat for a second?
If I say that that we choose some words, would that still go along with that? Because we do choose, you know, like...
Right. We've already done that. I really want you to know how they get the structure of the game. The leader gives the children numbers.
We want to get her a lot drunk.
Feeling and the number.
And Terry
please
tired.
Please, happy.
Everybody does.
And they run into a happy position.
I wish we had more.
You can't get out of these doors. No one would come in here.
Yeah.
Dr. Hemphill hates this area. Yeah. He never comes through.
And so,
looks the money,
what
I think.
Is, if it doesn't come through, we'll lose your PO. And I'm not clear on that yet. Tell us about how your kids play the feeling game.
Okay, in the feeling game, the leaders give the other children numbers. It could be happy.
Say it could be happy again.
The engineer just fell off his chair.
Said happy ring.
It could be happy. It could be excited, crazy, exhausted, whatever. And then he gives a number. He assigns a number to the children. He'll say, all of the threes feel happy. And it's beautiful to see them run under the parachute, and they freeze. If they're happy, they freeze in a shape that shows happy. If they're exhausted, they freeze in a shape that shows exhausted. And to see the leader give directions, and also to see the children carry out these directions, and to make all of these, the facial expressions and everything, it's really interesting.
Numbers game. That was perfect.
In the numbers game, the leader calls out a math combination, and usually we use math facts up to 20 because it's easier for the children to give these combinations. And the leader calls out numbers like 5 plus 5, and the children give the answers. And he also gives a number.
I have that.
That's not how they did it.
Okay.
Because
we've got...
Ready anytime you are, Stevie.
In the numbers game, the leader calls out a math combination that adds up to either... Now, the children choose the numbers, and... they've chosen 6, 8, and 12, and then the leader calls out the combinations that will match either 6, 8, or 12. And if he calls out 8 plus 4, the children will give the answer of 12, and then those that are assigned the number 12 change places under the parachute.
Cut? You didn't understand a word of it, did you, Leonard?
Only asking one question, you know, starting out with a question for the day, you know, and then building up to evaluation and all these kinds of things.
Integration is a step that comes after integration.
You can pick up when people are nervous and she's very nervous.
Integration is what is the meaning of that and how are you going to use it later on?
Probably should have done her first. You don't have
a
nervous.
It's really heavy.
People pay a fortune to get your calmness.
And we do it all the time. Nervous. It's helping a minute, and it's a bridge with the decision making.
Your heartbeat is probably
bridge to all those things.
Come in, Ed. I have one thing
just
to
like
say to you, Ed. This is
the last week of school. I had gone all year without, you know, nothing was missing from my desk. I never had to worry.
Well,
you know, I had heard, you know, that these kids
enrolling
are
or without
kind of, you know,
mm-hmm,
rogues.
She was
and
incredible.
I never had any trouble. My whistle
no
was missing. And I said, all right, kids, so I got them together. We've got a problem.
Table noise?
You know, if we want to have our sack races, and if we want to, you know, go out and play some games, you know, I've got to have my whistle. So Willie
brought
a plastic whistle.
What did they put you at? Well, you still
have
yelled
to my whistle. You can use my plastic whistle. And then the kids were saying, oh, we've got to find,
when's the last time she's
find a whistle. And we talked about, you know, how if somebody,
have they been to Salt Lake City?
Finds it. If they happen to, you know, thought it belonged to them and accidentally picked it up.
Go on, I want to hear the story two more times.
And put it back in my desk.
A challenge?
Who it is.
A challenge. A challenge at all.
And I told them that my whistle meant a great deal to me because I used it when I was a
little girl. He likes that stuff.
He'd gone with me for, you know, I said, that's a part of my life.
It's not a
whistle.
It's not comfortable for women to get something else.
And Willie's just like, well, you can use my whistle. He gave me this green and white plastic whistle.
I love it. Did you get it back?
It didn't work. Mm-hmm. Go back to fashion.
No, I really think what happened was when I got to thinking about it, I had it on a string, and I think it fell off. I really think, because, I mean, you know, if they were going to take it, you know, they had every opportunity all year. And I really think, because I'd wear it,
nice people, Macy's,
you know, and we'd go outside and we'd be running or whatever, and I really think that I dropped it. And just
where's the wine?
Oh.
You hear that, Eric?
I don't like
you
bleed.
Leonard.
Wait a second. Can you hear that?
But they, and every day they'd ask me, did you, you know, do you have your whistle? And even the last day of school, they were, do you want us to look smart as we're cleaning the room? Do you think maybe, I don't know, maybe I just, but I trusted those kids, you know, so
it's going away
just
now.
It is going. It just came on for a second. I'm not even talking to you. What is this?
You can pull it
wasn't there before.
You
and
can
I think
pull
it started
out.
Up.
It
did just start. That's why I asked. Yeah.
Is this yours?
Yes. Would you like some?
Yeah. I don't.
As long as
I get my own.
Continues. I mean, it's not going to be cut together, so I'm not worried about it.
You specifically. The rest of us were asked.
Cheryl
on
integration.
Trying to keep it cool.
It's the boiler room that I love.
For me, integration is something very important. It's finding
for me
personal meaning to a situation. I've only done this recently, but it takes real courage on the teacher's part to be able to ask just one question. And I asked them what they had learned on this particular day. And to hear their answers was just incredible. Children are so honest. It was the best feedback that a teacher could ever have. And it just, it made my whole day. It was something that I had never really felt before. And it showed me that there was a certain openness in our classroom, and it kind of brought us all together. And
20 minutes.
I don't know.
I tried. I gave up.
It not only made me a teacher, but it made me a person.
I think what I'd like you to do, what I really want you to do, is instead of the question,
is this the only man this year?
Take courage from what they've learned.
Takes courage to ask children what they've liked or disliked about the day.
I'll meet a Ben Johnson.
And to hear their answers, it was just incredible. They were honest, and it was the best feedback that I could get as a teacher. And it not only made me feel like a teacher, but it made me feel like a real person, and there was a sense of more openness in our classroom.
The real problem here is we have a bureaucracy with an extension of the federal government.
Yeah, I know.
God, is that impossible.
It's super.
Now, who do you want me to use? Do you want me to use Uncle Max, or I'm just thinking of who you're going to cut out?
Yeah, Uncle Max.
We're not cutting that one out.
Which,
My grandmother. Terrible time.
Okay, roll tape, please. Drink the wine and roll tape. Go. It's rolling. Go ahead, Sharon.
When the children share something they learn from Uncle Max and Aunt Kate, we all learn more about ourselves and about each other. Sharing is socializing in a different kind of way. It's very important to realize what we have in common and also to recognize the differences that we have. It's kind of like, look how unique we are, that we all are. Okay, it's kind of like, look how unique we all are here in the same room, or how much we can learn about each other or from each other. We value and respect different kinds of living. I really think that's what pluralism is all about.
You do it one more time from the top for me. It was very good. I just want to make sure I get it. One thing, when you say it's kind of like, look how unique we are, it's almost like a surprise. Look how unique we are.
Yeah.
Well, don't overemphasize it. That's kind of the tone. Go ahead.
Okay. When the children share something they learned, like Uncle Max or...
No, learned.
Oh, okay. When the children share something they learn from Uncle Max and Aunt Kate, we all learn more about ourselves and about each other. Sharing is really socializing in a different way. It's very important to realize
that what the girl was saying.
We have in common, and that we can recognize our differences. It's kind of like, look how unique we are. How unique we all are in this room.
Personally, I believe
how much we can learn about and how much we can learn from each other.
I grew up in a home that said,
it's valuing and respecting many ways of living.
Who cares?
I really think
that's what pluralism
is all about.
Big deal. It really depends on what you feel.
Yeah, did you ever take acting?
Did you ever act?
I'm serious.
Yeah.
I thought so.
You did?
All the games you're playing right now.
You're a natural actor.
You read that like it was just coming straight out.
Okay. Can you do the next one? I'll stop you if you want.
Okay.
You do. You say what I think.
Let me start now.
Yeah.
Right?
We're rolling, aren't we?
Is that on?
Okay.
Is this on?
We're discovering that children are learning many skills in these small sharing groups. There are skills in oral language and in writing. And by reading their logs, their
bad.
Diaries.
Okay.
We're discovering that children are learning many skills in these small sharing groups. Their skills in oral language and in writing and reading their logs, their diaries. These children are just beginning to appreciate what...